Well, hello and good afternoon, and welcome to today's Thought Leader Roundtable, a conversation on readiness. Today's conversation is a part of a regular series of explorations of the key questions of what does it take for all young people to be ready for life's demands at every stage, and what is it going to take to get there? Karen Pittman, CEO and President of the Forum for Youth Investment, leads lively and candid conversations with some of the most influential, boundary-pushing leaders working to improve the lives of children and young people in the U.S. Today's topic is a special one. We're actually going to have the youth speak. It's going to be thoughts on social, emotional, and academic development in K-12 education. Recently, the Aspen Institute launched the National Commission on Social, Emotional, and Academic Development. Composed of leaders from education, science, government, and the private sector, this commission is engaging and energizing communities to fully integrate social, emotional, and academic development in K-12 education so that all students are prepared to thrive in school, in our evolving 21st century workforce, and in life. Karen Pittman proudly serves as a member of the National Commission, and in this conversation, she'll be joined with several members of the Aspen Youth Commission who are providing critical input and perspective to the National Commission's deliberations. To actually quote and cite one of the youth commissioners, I'd like to read a little bit about the commission itself. It serves as an advisory body to the National Commission in helping to provide a relevant perspective on the current state of education. The Youth Commission aims to supplement the work of the National Commission by providing lived experiences and advice to strengthen the Commission's recommendations. Members of the Youth Commission also serve as ambassadors to their communities on the SEED approach. Four youth commissioners, all college students, will speak about their roles as youth representatives on the commission, their understanding of the importance of social, emotional, and academic skills for youth success, and their thoughts on what K-12 schools can do to support skill development. Due to the large number of presenters on today's sessions, we will not be doing long introductions and bios. We have posted their online bios as well as some light resources both in the confirmation email you should have received and on the readyby21.org website under the events tab. So the four youth commissioners that we'll have on today's call are Isabel Geisler, Chris Herod, Alyssa Taylor, and Jamar White. A few logistic updates. There is no visual component of today's session. We will be accepting questions and comments via Twitter, both during the session and all week. Please use the hashtag ReadyYouth. Again, that's ReadyYouth, R-E-A-D-Y, again, O-U-T-H, to join the conversation. Today's session is being recorded. Later this week, it will be sent to everyone who registered and posted to the Ready by 21 website. And now I'd like to turn it over to Karen.
Thanks, Ian. And welcome to the youth commissioners. I had the pleasure of hearing them at the first National Commission's meeting, and I think probably by the time I got back to my office, had already sent an email saying I would love to have some of them join, and I'm delighted that the demand was so high that we got four of them to join us. So it's going to be a lively conversation. We definitely are going to keep it as a conversation. And I want to start by getting each of them to give us a little bit of an introduction of themselves. You have their bios of what they're doing now up, as Ian said, and those bios are very impressive. What I'm going to ask them to do is to sort of roll time back a little bit and give us a description of who they were in either middle or high school. Jamar, why don't we start with you? How would you describe yourself back then?
Middle and high school was a bit of a tough time for me in terms of academics. I was not taking things as seriously as I needed to. My grades kind of suffered. But after working with extracurricular activities, like student government, I was able to pull myself up. SGA was a really big piece for inspiring me to do what I needed to do academically, the social-emotional piece that really got me where I needed to be.
Great. Thank you. We'll come back to that and learn more about it. Alyssa, can you describe yourself a little bit from back then in high school or middle school?
Yeah, I think I've always been a really engaged student. I've always loved school, elementary, middle, high school. But in high school, I was enrolled in the International Baccalaureate Program, so you know that brought its own challenges, but it was something that I wanted to do and something that I enjoy doing. But I really think that also being involved in sports helped me to keep my grades up because you have to keep certain GPA to be able to participate. And so while I was still engaged, I think my real passion was for sports.
Great. And that's a passion of lots of young people, so we'll come back to that topic in a second. Chris, let's go to you. How do you describe yourself back then?
I think for me the challenge was trying to be authentic in terms of my identity and who I was. It was easy for me to excel in school because it kind of was one of those things that just came naturally for me. So the academic component wasn't really what I struggled with as much as it was the social component of relating to my peers and wanting to fit in and wanting to be myself but also, you know, have friends. And so middle school was definitely challenging in that regard. When I got to high school, it was definitely an environment where excelling and being a high-achieving student was welcomed. It was definitely a juxtaposition towards my middle school where, you know, I was bullied and ostracized for performing well. So the high school experience for me was definitely one where I was able to realize myself in a different way.
And since we're on the phone, when you say sort of it was sort of working with figuring out how to have your identity connect to being able to excel in middle school, is that related to being African American? Is that related to what was it related to?
Even though I went to a middle school and high school where most of my classmates looked like me, the notion of performing well was frowned upon. It's like, why do you care about school? Why does this matter so much to you? And growing up in a place like Baltimore and an inner-city school district where we had our own sets of challenges, it was difficult to navigate that pathway of I can still be, you know, I can still be a normal kid or a normal young person and still care about my academics.
Good, good. And then last but certainly not least, Isabel, can you describe what you were like back in high school?
Sure. So I grew up in Prince George's County right outside of D.C. and went to a very diverse school there until I think fourth or fifth grade where I moved to rural Frederick County. And right there I loved learning. I had a passion for reading. I loved school every day. I woke up very excited to go to school. But at the same time I was painfully shy. And I had some self-esteem issues, and it wasn't until much later that I was diagnosed with obsessive-compulsive disorder and depression.
So mental health issues that certainly come in with lots of students that certainly you need that kind of supportive environment for. So what we want to do over the next, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, and as you all have questions, please go ahead and tweet them in to Ian, who will read them to us so we can keep the discussion going. We really just want to delve into this idea of what these social and emotional skills are, how they're developed, how folks can be intentional about developing them, and then really what you all mentioned the environment, that you were the school as an environment in which you either felt welcomed, you felt like you had were challenged or not challenged, and so we want to really sort of help people distinguish between how we understand and build those skills, what just the general environment, the culture and climate of the school does for those, how you have explicit experiences that help you build those skills, and most of all, just why they're important to you now. So let me just jump ahead to now. As we think about these skills, and for folks on the phone, we shared, just there are lots of ways to describe the social emotional skills and abilities and competencies. We shared the readiness abilities that the forum uses with all of the youth commissioners. And so I just want you to think now, as you're doing the things that you're doing, whether that's in school, in your classes, in all of you are doing exciting work in your communities and sort of volunteer work, a lot of you are looking for jobs or already employed. As you think about what you're doing now as young adults, which of these skills stand out that you just sort of have to now use on a daily basis? Is it your ability to sort of self-manage? Is it your ability to express emotion, to apply what you've learned, to work as teams? What's standing out as skills that are really useful for you now? Let me start with the two folks on the phone. I'll just ask you to sort of chime in a little bit, starting with Jamar, and then we'll come back in the room.
Right now, the biggest thing that stands out to me in my life really my ability to engage with people in the sense that here in college, you kind of have to work with people to make sure that you're doing what needs to be done. And that goes for, you know, same thing with the workplace, going out and working with different people. Just in general in life, especially now, being able to engage with people, talk to them face-to-face, and relating to others are really big pieces of what's going on with me and the different things that I like to do and it's really been helping me out.
Great. And Jamar, you mentioned that in school you weren't a great student, you weren't the most sort of inspired or engaged student, but you got engaged in student government. Can you talk a little bit, what was different about what you were doing in student government versus classes that got you engaged and motivated?
The biggest thing was probably the teamwork type of experience, teamwork ethics, communication skills, things like that. In the classroom, it was more so being talked at, being lectured to in terms of what was being taught. So I was getting the academic piece, but student government gave me the social and emotional piece like it gave a lot of other students. And those pieces kind of went hand in hand. And once I got the social emotional piece, I was able to get the academic piece a lot better.
Okay. So actually having that student government experience in which you got to work as a team, you got to be creative, you got to apply what you were learning, that kind of experience got you more motivated to go back into the classroom and work, even though that environment wasn't as engaging?
Most definitely, because to do what I wanted to do, student government, I enjoyed it so much. I had to have matching grades, matching academics. So that pushed me to get where I needed to be GPA-wise, academic-wise.
Okay, good. So it pushed you back into the content. All right, let me mix it up a bit and go across to Chris. So, Chris, you told us a story about math class. Since we're talking about classes, that academic classes not always being as engaging as things like student government, and we'll come back to Alyssa about sports. But you actually had a unique experience in math. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So math was one of those subjects that I had struggled through once I got to middle school. You know, elementary school was fine, but middle school, there was at some point where I kind of just made up in my mind, math is not for me, right? And not really, you know, challenging that, just kind of accepting it as reality. And so once I got to high school, our district and our state at the time was going through some curriculum changes. We had to, you know, focus on kind of hunkering down our math skills. And it was a difficult time for me because I was coming to high school at a deficit. Many of my classmates had some form of algebra, pre-algebra, coming out of middle school. And, you know, I kind of just got by with what I had. So it was challenging for me to, you know, make that transition. But the thing that I think helped me was having that relationship with my math teacher, of going to her and talking to her and just being like, this is where I am. This is kind of what I don't understand. And her taking the time to show me how it applies to the real world. Because at that time, you know, I was, you know, being a young teenager, like, oh, this isn't matter, you know, who cares about the Pythagorean theorem, who cares about any of this other stuff, it doesn't relate to the real world. And so when she challenged me to take the concepts we were learning in class and apply them to the real world, this is how this works, I start to get a more of an appreciation for it, and that appreciation led to me wanting to pursue and develop my understanding of the mathematical concepts.
And was it something different about the way she taught the classes as well, as I remember you discussing it?
It was the setup of a focus on collaboration, right? So it was never like I'm competing against the person next to me. Mm-hmm. If anything, we're all working together. And I think that element of emphasis on collaboration is what really highlighted my high school experience relative to that of my middle school experience. The high school I went to was a STEM magnet school in Baltimore City. And so our focus was on preparing students for careers in health professions. And the idea was that if we work together, we can solve a lot of the issues that are plaguing our communities. And so the same expectation that my math teacher had in her classroom was similar to the same expectation that my science teacher had in her classroom, right? And if we were going to solve these complex problems and understand how to use the metric system, right, then I knew I needed to increase my knowledge in math so that I could apply it to science. So even though my math teacher was giving me real-world examples, my science teacher was supplementing that with saying that you needed this level of math in order to solve these science problems. So they were working together in tandem.
Right. So they're working together to really make those things relevant for the real world, but also putting you all in teams, making this a collaborative experience, making it relevant, forcing you to actually apply what you learned in one class over the next class. So lots of things that were happening in there and I'm assuming a lot of focus, since it was a STEM class, a lot of focus on problem solving, not just rote learning.
And when we say problem solving, we're talking about, I'm learning this now, you know, just recently graduating college. A lot of times when we focus on problem solving, a key part of that is critical analysis,
mm-hmm.
right? Understanding what the problem is so that we can bring forth substantive solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes, there's tons of solutions to problems. The question is this solution sustainable and is it substantive, right? Is it comprehensive
mm-hmm.
in its approach? And I think that that was the beginning of understanding that was something that I can definitely attribute to my high school experience.
And are those skills serving you well now?
Yes. Most definitely. Especially the collaboration aspect. I'm transitioning into a position with local government, and there's a lot of things that I'm learning even now that, you know, is in our local government, things don't work in silos, right? Effectively, they don't work in silos. So if I want to get something done, say, for the constituents of the individual that I'm working for, then I might need to contact different city agencies and work together.
Mm-hmm. Great. Alyssa, you mentioned that you were an excited and engaged student, but also engaged in sports. Talk a little bit about how those complement each other.
Well, I think a lot of the times when you're, you know, a kid in high school, you don't necessarily think about how the skills you're learning on the basketball court are going to translate to the classroom. But now, being out of high school, being out of undergrad, in my first year of graduate school, I can definitely see how, like, the team building aspect of it, communication, time management, all those things definitely played a factor into what I've been doing and to where I'm at now. And I think sometimes, like, on the basketball court, or I guess in any sports or student government, anything that you're involved in, can sometimes make students feel like more free and more open and more willing to learn these skills so that they can be applied in the other areas of their life.
Good. And was there a difference between your classes and your sports activities, both either in terms of your the expectations that adults had from you about any of those things you mentioned, your ability to work as a team, your time management skills, your ability to persist and stay focused even when things weren't going well? Were the expectations of how those skills were used different between class and sports?
Well, I think for me, my experience was a little bit different because I was in international baccalaureate, because our workload is very heavy and we have a lot of other requirements. So for us, I think those skills were not only like expected, but they were necessary for us to have.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the average student always has those things. Like, they don't always have those incorporated into the classroom as much as I did. So for me, yes, mm-hmm. I feel like my teachers and the people who were supporting me definitely emphasized those and put importance on them. But, you know, that's not everybody's experience.
Right. And I'm assuming that having that emphasis across all aspects of school and learning actually was helpful.
Yeah, no, it was definitely helpful because I think it helped me to have a smoother transition to college and now graduate school, because nobody's going to be holding my hand while I'm taking these classes and I have to do a lot of things for myself. And so it's up to me to stay organized, up to me to talk to people and get things that I need done. So they've definitely been beneficial through these years.
Good. So, Lisa, Isabel, you mentioned that you were, you know, sort of painfully shy as you were coming through school. So which of these skills did you really find you had to build in order to come out of that and deal with the issues? Just talk a little bit about which of these skills really are the things that you now lead with in order to do your resume is incredible. So in order to do all the things that you're doing now, what did you actually have to build in terms of these skills? And then we'll talk a little bit about who helped you do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was definitely a combination of things.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely emotional skills. It was communication skills. And there were leadership skills, which I really see
mm-hmm.
as going hand-in-hand in confidence. So questions like, can I talk to other people thinking that my ideas are worth expressing?
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm in college, really the attitude that I have when it comes to taking on research or projects isn't, can I do this? It's, how can I do this?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a very important mindset for people to take on as they grow older. And, you know, I think the earlier that starts, the more beneficial for them.
That's great. I'm writing that down. Not can I do it, but how can I do it? Does that resonate with the rest of you? I think that's important. And that's, you know, you mentioned mindset and that idea of what people now call a growth mindset,
mm-hmm.
that idea that you walk into something and you don't think, well, I can't do it now. That means I can never do it, but I can't do it now. So what is it that I could possibly be able to do? What other skills can I sort of draw on to be able to be successful in this? And that certainly helps us persist and do all of those things. So how, as someone is shy, you can get ignored in the back of the classroom. What was it like? How did you build these skills at home? Were there teachers that helped? Were there explicit things that were happening in the classroom that drew you out? What was the experience?
I think I can really attach it to a teacher. And for everyone's reference, I'm 5'2". So not only am I very quiet, I'm very short as well. So I don't stand out. But I have this one teacher who I got very close with. I came to him. I said, hey, I want to start this organization that talks about women's rights issues. He told me I could do it. He supported me on that. Later, he asked me to be his TA for two semesters. So I was presenting at the front of the classroom. I was helping other students. And because of his role in the social science department, I got recognized for a lot of things because I made that connection with a person who believed in me, which I see as the most fundamentally important part. It's someone who believes, someone who is, you know, quiet, not extroverted, is capable of doing things.
Great. So some of you have mentioned, Elisa mentioned, that you're in an international baccalaureate program where essentially every teacher has got this expectation that you're building these relationships and that the expectation that these skills are important and they're used regularly and they're relied on was sort of there in sports and in the classroom. Chris and Isabel, you mentioned particular teachers that sort of stood out, that developed that relationship with you. So what about the other teachers? What was the difference between those teachers that took the time to both make the relationship with you but also create that learning environment that was more collaborative and challenging and pulling out these skills? What about the other teachers or the other classes?
I think that looking back, one of the things that helped me to understand why my high school experience was so supportive and helpful for me was understanding the dynamics of how schools work. And as someone who sat on the school board in Baltimore City and understands the administrative component of how that works, I can tell you that while the basis of a good education starts in the classroom and, you know, is that teacher-student interaction, we also need strong administrators to support our teachers and our students. And I think that the notion of the high expectations, at least in my experience, started with my principal. Everyone knew my principal. Mind you, my school was only 500 students. My high school was only 500 students. But everyone knew Dr. Jackson. Dr. Jackson had very high expectations. Whenever we were engaging in our coursework or even moving about the hallways, it wasn't uncommon for her to be there asking us questions about what we were learning and even, you know, stepping in the classroom, not to take over, but just to observe. Right, and to support our teachers,
mm-hmm.
because we had teachers who were had as much experience as 10 to 15 years, and even some of our newer teachers. But the expectation of the quality of education that we were receiving was standard across the board. High expectations for students, high expectations for teachers. Right, and I think that that atmosphere, that environment, it just cultivated each of us to give our best, teachers and students. So I think that to kind of put this in a summary, having strong administrators, right? And I think the other part that really helped was that Dr. Jackson, she had the experience of teaching in the classroom, right? She did this for 10 to 15 years. She wrote curriculum, right? So she had all these different aspects of the educational experience to contribute to us.
Good. You still want to comment on that?
Sure, I'll comment on it. And I think adding to that is, as class sizes become larger,
mm-hmm.
it becomes much harder for teachers to say, hey, this is a student I connect with, maybe in an interest level, a social level. I think I want to help them better their skills.
Mm-hmm.
And, as classes get bigger, flashy students stand out, and there's
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong with being extroverted. It's just that sometimes people are overlooked. And I think that goes hand in hand with having self-awareness as an educator. So do I favor certain students over others because of unconscious biases? Do I favor extroverts over introverts because they're more outgoing? Do I think this boy does better in math and sciences just because I can picture him as a scientist mm-hmm. instead of this girl? And I know the teacher I definitely got a lot of help with. He was very self-aware.
So let's talk a little bit about what we can do to be make it more explicit that these kinds of skills are named and used. We talk a lot about, or at least adults talk a lot about, sort of building social-emotional skills or developing social-emotional skills, but, you know, they're not just built in schools. They're built in families. They're built in youth organizations. They're built in your faith organizations. They're built in as you're working with your peers. And so we also need to make sure they're used and they're recognized. So let me just start with the basics. Were these skills named when you were using your problem-solving skills or your communication skills or your skills to be persistent and sort of come back and try to solve a problem after you failed a couple of times? Were the teachers in particular or were adults in your life naming these skills and telling you that that's what you were doing, or did you just sort of learn that after the fact? How explicit were these things named? Chris is pointing to the phone. So Jamar or Lisa, do you want to jump in? And how were these actually named and talked about in middle and high school, even elementary school?
Go ahead. For the most part, not really. The pieces where I heard them named the most were usually in elementary school, the place where you're getting, you know, that core background on, you know, what you'll be building your educational experience out of. Elementary school, you heard a lot of terms, you know, teamwork, communication skills, things like that, because they wanted, you know, those young, impressionable minds to know how to do these things. But as I moved up, middle school, high school, it stopped being about that and more so just about the academic piece, because I believe to an extent it's assumed you already have those skills, you already know what they are, and so there's a lot less communication on that front about that. But I can say that in middle school, a really big piece where it was named, I attended arts integration middle school, Cranston Arts Academy. And these things were named a lot while we did different arts activities in our academic classroom. And it was very helpful, and it was very necessary for me going forward.
Talk a little bit more about that. So they were named a lot, and why was that? Why was that helpful to have them named in real time?
I guess it's more so kind of connecting what you're doing and knowing exactly what it is you're doing. And you can carry it for yourself as you go forward. So knowing that, hey, these are communication skills, or, hey, I'm working with people, and these are things that I'm going to be using. It's very helpful for students, in my opinion. I think it's something they can take and move forward with.
Good. Great. And, Lisa, you mentioned you use these skills all the time. Were they explicitly named that you were – you know, you were expected to be creative and express your emotions and persist through failure? Were these things named, discussed? Were there posters up on the wall? What? How did they come across?
You know, I think it depends on the classroom, because I definitely had certain teachers who were very explicit in making sure that we had these skills, because being an IB, the goal is to get everybody to college. And so I think they know that all these skills are necessary in order for us to move forward academically. So certain teachers, yes, I would say they definitely made us aware that we were learning these skills in preparation to have us, like, move on in our education and go to college, but others not necessarily. So I think it just depends on the teacher and the classroom and the environment that they wanted to create for their students.
Okay. And in addition to naming the skills, what kinds of things were done to have you actually have an opportunity to actually practice and use the skills? How were classes or sports or student government, how was it organized so that you actually had a chance to really put these skills to use once you knew that they were important? You've mentioned, you know, sort of project-based learning. Are there other ways that that these were explicitly sort of built in so you had to use them and get recognition for them?
Well, I think, again, only certain classes, but a lot of them would be like – conversation-based, like the teacher wouldn't just be standing up and lecturing to us. So I think having students be more engaged and having students lead discussions or have students give, like, their own individual presentations and then have a discussion about that afterwards helps to have these skills. like built upon.
Mm-hmm. Jamar, you have thoughts about either your classroom or your student government experience? How did these, what explicit things were done that gave you the sort of the time and space to really use and practice these skills?
Well, just using student government as the example, that in itself has these time to practice these skills in it, built into it. So, you know, you come in, you perform these different meetings, you try to engage students around the school so you can help them better themselves. That in itself, sitting down with administrators, talking to adults, talking to each other, just that form itself is what gave these skills, allows you to practice the skills. So I think the student government has those already engaged into or put into it.
Good. Okay. And now, school is more than just classrooms. It's libraries, it's cafeterias, it's other kinds of settings inside the school, and then we can come and talk a little bit about outside the school as well. But just look at those other places in the school where you have adults, from the library, the cafeteria, other areas. What about the other adults in the building? What's their role in helping you practice and name these skills and call on these skills when they see them needed? So if you're in the cafeteria and, you see a fight break out, were the adults actually calling on these skills? Talk a little bit about other adults in the school building. I'll let whoever jump in. If one of you on the phone wants to jump in, just yell first.
I can speak to this. Idea of the other adults in the building. We had hall monitors in our school.
Mm-hmm.
That was just kind of part of keeping that school climate, safety, but also making sure that, things were flowing as they should. And even though these hall monitors, they weren't teachers, they were professionals, they just weren't our teachers, there was always these kind of check-in conversations that different students would have. And because we would see them every single day, they knew us by name, the school wasn't that large, so we had that opportunity to have those real relationships. And I think that one of the things that helped me, at least, was having these individuals who were a part of essentially my cheering team,
mm-hmm.
right? So we talk about resilience, we talk about perseverance, this notion that I can persist through struggle and maintain hope. Having these individuals who were in the hallway and just kind of, keeping us to stay on track and stay focused, especially during junior and senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how many colleges have you applied to? When's your next, college visit, all right? And how's your essay writing going, right? Have you talked to so-and-so about doing this? So these check-ins and this level of accountability
mm-hmm.
was definitely something that I think further supported my growth, not only in the classroom, but also in this kind of life perspective. So I know for me that for me to be successful, I need to have individuals who know what my goals are
mm-hmm.
and then are actively asking me as I'm going along each stage, how is that going?
And to have those folks, I mean, that's the most amazing description of a hallway monitor that I've heard personally, and absolutely wonderful that they were not just there to move you from class to class, but really got to know you and played that role in supporting you. Did others have that experience, whether it was with your hallway monitors, your counselors, your cafeteria workers, and then you can certainly add in other key people in your community? Schools had don't corner the market on developing social emotional skills and competencies, and often sort of underinvest in that. So we can add in some discussion about folks in other parts of the community as well. But were there other folks in your schools that actually supported these skills and called on students to develop these skills, other than your teachers? Isabella shaking her head no, but you probably can't see that on the phone. It doesn't come across well on the phone. Jamar, other folks, other teachers who really could have played this role for you?
Yes, one in particular, and this again kind of connects back to my student government period, and I'm sorry about that. That's just a really big piece of
what
I did in high school.
That's where you got the engagement experience. That's a story.
Yeah.
Go for it.
So my student government advisor, she was an amazing woman. She is an amazing woman. She was also in charge of the peer mentoring program at my high school. So she had those communication skills, talking to people, making sure everyone was doing what they needed to do to begin with. And she was someone that pretty much anyone in the school could come to talk to, any issues that we're having. She always checked up on us. She always, you know, sent emails, texts, anything. Anytime we needed anything or to talk to her about anything, she was there, and that was actually a very key piece in my support system throughout the college application period, just doing things, making sure, you know, my grades were going okay, things like that. She was always there, and it was very much appreciated and very much necessary.
Great. So I have a thing to throw in here, because I think what you all are raising is a really important piece, which is we talk a lot about helping young people build these skills, but maybe we don't talk enough about whether adults have these skills. So the folks that you have mentioned that stood out, when you talk about them, you're saying they did. They knew how to talk to us. They had communication skills. They could draw this out. They could help us solve problems. So how important is it that the adults in your lives actually have these skills? Jump in.
Okay. So I think it's incredibly important because whether we know it or not, we copy people that we admire, right? So if we are looking at this teacher and we admire them a lot, but they aren't showing these skills, you know, subconsciously we're going to think either this isn't important or subconsciously, how do I communicate this? Because a lot of these skills are implicit. They're how you treat others, how you talk about issues, how you approach a problem, just general mindset. And you can tell students as much as you want, hey, you should focus on this, you should problem solve in this way, you should treat other people this way, you should communicate in this way. But if you're not doing it or if the adults in their lives aren't doing it, it's going to be very hard for them to figure out how to do that.
Jamar, Elisa, what do you think? How important is it for adults to have these skills, and did your adults have them?
It's incredibly important. For the most part, I think Isabel hit the nail on the head with what she said. You know, students tend to see what they see in adults and kind of internally copy it, or you'll make subconscious suggestions on what these things mean. And I think Isabel pretty much covered what I would say on that.
Good.
I think if I could just chime in on that briefly, being in an environment like science, and this is something that translated even into my undergrad experience, this notion of collaboration and working together was so important that not only did we have to have it modeled for us and, you know, actually perform it as students, but we saw it amongst our teachers, many of whom weren't just also teachers, but they were writing the curriculum that we needed to be successful as students. So as we were working together to solve problems, they were working together to think of real-world problems to present to us so that we could, it was like a symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, trying to find challenges to present to us so that we could solve them, and it kind of just worked in tandem like that. It was
and
beautiful.
You saw them doing that work together.
We saw them working together. Mm-hmm. I remember I had a senior project that was interdisciplinary. So I had my science teacher talking to my AP government teacher. We were trying to figure out how we could move policy to support science.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so there was this overlap, and you know, it's at this point that I realized that you really do need all these different subjects working together. So that I think it was right as I was leaving high school that I was beginning to appreciate this notion of what it means to be interdisciplinary, right, and being able to draw from all these different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely helpful, and I just think that my teachers really modeled that well.
That's great. So One of the wonderful things about being on the National Commission, not that I don't have enough things to read, is that they gave us an amazing set of reading materials so that we all were sort of coming in with a common understanding of what was going on. And one of the pieces that stood out was that there was actually some work done to ask the question, if we're not paying enough attention to these skills in schools, in terms of building students' abilities, we may also not be paying enough attention to whether teachers have these abilities. And so they asked the question, and I can't remember exactly how they did this, but they looked at whether teachers sort of led with academics or led with sort of this social-emotional, and what they found were two things. One, most teachers lead with one or the other. Only, I think the number was only 17% of teachers actually have both. So to have someone who's really going to have be strong in the academic content, that's usually what you're hired for, but also have come in with these abilities so that they can help you draw them out. And they can also use those abilities to create a more engaging learning environment, which is going to help you learn the content. So it all kind of goes together. But they actually found that it's actually rare for teachers to have both of those. And because we tend to hire based on academic content, we may be sort of giving short shrift. Now, you may have been in a school, because it was a STEM school, in which you had a higher proportion of those teachers because they were looking for teachers who wanted to come in together and write curricula and work as a part of a team, et cetera. And the same may be true for the International Baccalaureate. But for your average school, we really may not be paying enough attention, not just to the skills and abilities of the students, but actually the adults. The second thing that study said was that teachers aren't rewarded for those skills when they have them. So because what you're rewarded for is whether your students perform well academically, even though now what we know out in the workforce is it's equally important, and sometimes it's not more important, to have these social and emotional skills and abilities and be able to use them to do teamwork and problem solving and communication and time management and have a sense of work ethic. Those are the things employers are looking for.
The preferred
soft skills or 21st century skills. Those are the skills that employers are looking for. We're not rewarding those skills. We're not rewarding the teachers who help build those skills in schools. So there's a lot of things to think about as it's coming clear from the outside world that these skills are really important. It's time to sort of push back into the schools. But let's go back to one of the questions of where else did you learn these skills, practice these skills, have these skills named and reinforced? What are the other places in your world in which these were encouraged and you found them useful?
I think adding on to Jamar's bit on student government, because I participated in student government as well in high school, there were teachers there who served as our advisors, but also when we did our projects and we went out, we did community-based events, community service. We were engaging with community leaders. This notion of understanding what it meant to relate to others in the world, because we had these, service projects that we had, we planned them, we executed them, and it was an opportunity for us to apply those soft skills that you're talking about, right? Yes, I'm a part of the service project, and we're cleaning up this local community park, but I'm also talking to residents, right? Mm-hmm. I'm also engaging with the elderly. I'm looking, figuring out how I can play with the younger kids. So this idea of readiness and understanding these are the skills that I need to be successful in the real world. Because I knew, when I was younger that I definitely wanted to work with other people. I wanted to work to support individuals, whether that was my passion for healthcare that led me to my high school or my passion for education that led me to be accepted to Teach for America. It's this notion of working with other people and helping others that I think my high school definitely helped me to understand.
Mm-hmm. Did any of you participate in youth organizations, whether they were community-based, faith-based, outside of school? I have heads nodding, but you can't see.
I did. Sorry, this is Isabel. So I think I'm a very physical person.
That's okay. I'm here to interpret.
So I think there were two things. I was part of a singing group in high school. I was part of vocal ensemble. And, I think, sometimes people overlook the arts,
mm-hmm.
Especially when compared to other disciplines. But, there's a certain kind of poetry in the arts, especially vocal ensemble, when we're looking at these soft skills, because it's all about blend. It's all about trusting the other people in your part, in other parts. And sometimes it's about leadership on your part. If you take a solo, it's your time to stand out. It's your time to take that on and be, the dazzling one. But if you're not, you take a step back, you blend with everyone else. And I think there's a lot of implied skills in things like singing. But I was also heavily involved in youth activities with my church. So I'm Roman Catholic. And we would, we did a lot of community service. I remember spending a whole week helping a elderly woman clean her house. And I learned a lot from her. And I learned a lot from the women I was working with in that practice. And it was also through church that I first learned about social justice and activism, which wasn't something I was really learning about in high school, so that definitely supplemented it.
Good. Elisa, did you have experiences outside of school sports? Did you have work with other youth organizations or faith organizations, or even find these that you learn these skills as you were working with your family? Other places where these were needed and named and used?
I wouldn't say so much in high school, because being IB and being involved in sports, I didn't really have a lot of time for like extra stuff. But when I was an undergrad, I worked at Howard University Middle School, and so I think those skills were definitely necessary, and I definitely incorporated them a lot into my daily activities working with 5th, 6th, and 7th graders.
Yeah, keep going.
You know, just, I don't know. I mean, just, it was interesting being on, like, the other side of it, like, not having necessarily those skills, like, taught to you, but having to teach them to other students and trying to help them to, you know, like, improve their skills as well.
Good. And were you working with them during the school day or after school?
It was both. So during the school day, I would either be in a classroom or I would do study halls with different age groups. And then sometimes after school, I would stay for like an extra hour, and they had different activities. So kind of depending on where they needed me to be, I would float around.
Okay. Good. Chris, did you have experiences outside of school that connected? You already told us that you had lots in school.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamar, did you have experiences outside of school?
There is one experience that I can, you know, physically remember that was kind of big for me. I worked with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation in high school, and we went out to the Eastern Shore of Maryland to help plant over 1,000 trees. And when I tell you, being able to talk to other people, communicating and getting help to plant these trees is very much necessary, because doing that alone would probably be impossible. That was a very big day for learning and making sure I was communicating with people, being involved in teamwork, and, you know, making sure I wasn't leaving anyone out alone and no one was leaving me out alone. It was a really good time to test my knowledge in those areas.
Okay, good, good. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left. So for folks, if you haven't been sending in questions, and I have been getting some that I've been incorporating into our discussion, but if you've got questions, and Ian, do you have anything you found off of the tweet? Do you want to?
So the one that just came in was, how engaged were your families at the beginning compared to now in you gaining social, emotional, and academic development skills?
Anyone want to take that question on?
Sure, I'll go for it. I think one of the things that contributed to my just knowledge of these areas was I was raised by both of my grandmothers, and their world perspective definitely influenced how I engage in school and even how I engage in my community. It was just really simple stuff, you know, understanding how to listen. Being an active listener, anyone who understands this whole concept of when you go and see grandma, she wants to know everything that happened, right? How's school going? You know, how's your day? How's your week? All that. So taking the time to just sit and listen, and my grandmother shared with me this very important thing. She says there's a difference between listening and hearing, right? And so when you are in a space and you're talking to people, even when you're meeting new people, having the time of just giving them the space that they need to express themselves and listen and understand, and that's how you build those relationships. So I think that when we talk about me being engaged and gaining these social and emotional kind of proficiencies, having being raised by my grandmothers and being in that environment, listening to them and listening to their experiences definitely helped me out a lot.
Good. So let me try one more thing as we have a few minutes left. Because we've talked a lot about how building these skills is really important as you move forward in college and work and life. And again, we've talked a lot about the role that, schools can play. But there's a study that came out about a year ago, and actually I just saw in my email a much shorter and easier to read article about the study, which we'll post up on the website. But a researcher named Bart Hirsch did an assignment, did an evaluation of a program, large program in Chicago called After School Matters, which really helps young people in middle and high school basically have apprenticeship experiences, go out and find people to work with in the real world, in their jobs. And the assumption was that this was going to help them better prepare for work and life because they're really having to use these skills and apply them while they're also learning about a career that they might be interested in. So the question for him as an evaluator was, how can we actually demonstrate that these young people are more job ready than young people who didn't have this kind of apprenticeship experience? Right? Well, you couldn't do that just by asking whether they got a job because that's relying on the labor market. So what he decided to do was to have HR professionals, human service professionals from local companies come together and put together a set of interview protocols and then interview the high school students like they were applying for an entry-level job and then score whether they would give them that job if they had one. On a scale of 1 to 5, if this young person was interviewing for a job you had, would you hire them? They expected they were going to get a really high score. They didn't. Only about 25% of the young people who had gone through this apprenticeship program, who clearly had been learning these skills and getting engaged, got a 4 or 5 in terms of being hired. They went back and asked the HR professionals, what was going on? Why didn't you hire them? Why wouldn't you hire them? And they said, well, we didn't expect them to know our job, to know what we do here in our company. But when we asked them questions like, tell me a time when you had to persist and stay focused when something was hard, or tell me a time when you had to lead a team, or tell me the kind of stories you were just telling. And they said, the students just couldn't tell us the stories. So they thought, and they said, well, we know the students had the experiences, so maybe it's just that we didn't give them a chance to actually reflect and name and know that those stories were important. So they put together a really simple 6-hour sort of course during the school day in which they really had young people sort of ask, name these skills, and reflect with each other, where's the last time I actually had to, you know, work with a team? Really push hard to do something that I wasn't good at, but it was important for me to finish it. Manage a conflict between two people that I cared about. Where was the last time I had to do one of those real work experiences? You know, show up on time persistently, even though it was really hard for me. Deal with somebody that, you know, had an opinion opposite to mine. Where did I have to do something like that? And this wasn't teaching. This was just practicing. And when they had these folks re-interviewed by different folks, the score went from a quarter of them being scored 4 or 5 to more than half of them being scored 4 or 5. That had nothing to do with teaching. That just had to do with this conversation we're having about actually making sure that people are knowing that these skills are important. And sometimes their experience wasn't just in the apprenticeship. Sometimes it's, well, you know, I'm the translator for my family. This is what I have to do in order to be able to make this happen. So just that idea of sort of wrapping up, and I'll have each of you sort of take, unless there are any other questions that have come in, have each of you just take a minute to tell us, if you were to go back in time, well, not go back in time physically, but if you were to go back to sit down, not necessarily at your high schools, because some of your high schools you were already doing these things, but if you were sitting down with folks in schools, and you can even say folks sort of in out of school and youth organizations that work closely with schools, to say, here's what we need you to do to make sure that the young people coming out of your school system are better able to name these skills and demonstrate these skills and even teach and support these skills in other people, what would you have them do? Would it be teach a class? Would it be train your teachers better? Would it be, what would you want them to be doing that would make, you know, the integration of social and emotional development with academic development the norm? Isabel, I'll start with you.
Okay.
What would you want them to do?
So I think looking back, and I'm a senior in college, so I feel really old right now. You know, you talked about storytelling, and I think that is very important. It's the idea that you're telling students that their experiences are important enough to be told to others, and you're giving them the words and vocabularies to express those stories. So a lot of times we think of things as too controversial or too difficult topics to talk about with middle schoolers or high schoolers, like racism, sexism, any matter of things. But that doesn't stop those things from happening. And it's often those challenging, those controversial obstacles that are really kind of forming some of those students' moments forward, pushing them backwards, and really forming their lives. So this idea that your experience is unique, your experience is valuable, and here's how to tell your story, and we want to listen to your story. Here are words. Don't be afraid to talk about things. I think it's incredibly important.
Right. So more time for storytelling. And more of an environment in which young people are really encouraged to sort of share where they are, share what they're feeling, and really start to develop words to talk about that, as well as the skills to actually deal with it. Jamar, let's go to you. What would you tell folks?
I think this is a pretty simple fix, I'd expect at least. I think it will come down to possibly when schools, counties, educational groups are hiring teachers. So, one, also stress the importance of social and emotional learning in classrooms, making sure the teachers know that this is also something they need to put in there to make sure the students are academically ready, because those two things go hand in hand. And to also have teachers kind of go through, they already do this, but go through a classroom experience, have teachers sit down, and kind of take, I guess, turn doing their own thing in terms of teaching other teachers how to do this, how to communicate, and naming these things with themselves so that they can go back, teach their students, and name them with them. This could go from elementary school to high school because, like I said earlier, elementary school seems to be more engaging in these things than middle school and high school tend to be, and that is something that would need to change to make sure that students are getting this all the way through from K to 12. So once they get to the workforce, college, that they have these skills and they're ready.
Great. Terrific. Alyssa?
You know, I think it would be possible to have a class for students to teach them these skills, but then once you incorporate a class, you come across the challenge of making it engaging and making it something that the students actually want to participate in and not just, you know, another class that they're being forced to take. I think the way to improve things, essentially, we have to train the teachers better so that they can encourage these skills in their students and, you know, ensure that they're taking them with them outside of the classroom, within their communities, and that they carry them beyond high school, beyond college, you know, like regardless of where their journeys are going, so that they can, I mean, be fully functioning adults and members of society.
Good. Chris?
And I'll end on the same note that I essentially started with when we talk about kind of piggybacking on what Isabel mentioned, this idea of identity, right? My story has value. My story has worth. Each of our students, whether it's, you know, from our affluent school districts or those that are, you know, in more challenging areas, understanding that each student and their story, it has value, it has power. You provide a space, you provide an area for them to have this moment of reflection and understanding where I am in relation to the world around me. And I think that maybe that does take the form of a course, right? We had an advisory period in my high school. That was solely what that time was for, us building, again, those authentic relationships with our faculty members in our school, but also taking the time to just sit back and think about where we are and how that relates to our life goals. So definitely having that idea to really build ourselves and to reflect on the world and the work that we're doing.
Good. And I'll end just by reinforcing some of the words that were just said. Reflection, important. Dedicated time for reflection and thinking and storytelling, important. This idea that this is critical for helping young people build a sense of self, build their identity, but also build a sense of agency. That statement of not just can I, but how can I, and deciding that you can do that. Those are critical things that are going on. And I want to reinforce that as we're having this conversation, this is not so much about teachers not understanding the importance of these skills, because when you survey them, they do. It's about conversations that we can have with teachers, with principals, as you said, Chris, this is all about the principal, with school leaders, and with folks in the community to say we have to make space. We have to name the skills. We have to make space for the conversations about them. We have to make space to make sure that people have time to practice them, to reflect on them, and to use them in ways that matter. And out in the community, whether it's in youth organizations or in faith organizations, where we're not leading with academics as the way that we're measuring success, people are often hired who do lead with these skills and have time to work with them. So this is an important opportunity for us to really come together to say, if we're going to make sure our young people are ready for college, work, and life, we need to up the ante on making sure that they're building social, emotional, and academic skills and developing forward. So we thank all of you for joining us. This was a great conversation. Any last words from you, Ian?
Thank you very much, and stay tuned for the recording as well as further materials, and please go to readybyte21.org/events for updates on future Thought Leader Roundtables. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.